Hello, everybody. Welcome back once again to Puppet Masters of None, the show where two former puppeteers who know absolutely nothing discuss all things puppet, puppeteers, and puppetry. We are your hosts. I'm Ben.
And I'm Will.
And Will, I know that you are super excited today. I am very excited today. What are we doing today, Will?
Today, finally, we're going to get to talk about Dark Crystal, Age of Resistance.
Oh, yes.
We had talked about Dark Crystal back in episode, 17?
Yeah, 17, yes.
And we ended up talking a lot about Age of Resistance just because it's so good. And we kept saying, oh, we'll get to that, we'll get to that, we'll get to that. And, like, we, you know, other things were more, you know, came up, other things we're doing. Finally, we get to sit and talk about Age of Resistance.
Yeah, we're going to do it for a couple weeks, too.
Yeah, yeah, this is going to be a two-parter. So exciting.
Yes! The original was only one-parter, interestingly enough. But much more
than
this one.
I mean, as we'll probably talk about in the Space to Carol, we'll see why.
Yep. Anywho, so, Dark Crystal Age of Resistance. Of course, this is the prequel series by Netflix. Mm-hmm. Lasted one season, and it is, of course, a prequel to the original 1982 Jim Henson Company fantasy classic, The Dark Crystal. If you want to know more about The Dark Crystal, go to episode 17. Not much more we can say. Talked a lot about it there, but just general overview, right? Jim wanted to create something that was entirely unique, an entirely new fantasy world, completely devoid of humans or non-Earth-type creatures, you know? And created this phenomenally beautiful film designed by famous fantasy artist, designer, author Brian Froud, and created this visually stunning piece. You can hear all of our opinions on that, of course, on episode 17. Mm-hmm. But we're going to jump into The Dark Crystal, Age of Resistance.
Just to touch on that, like what you had just said, like, Jim Henson wanted to create an entire world, and he did a phenomenal job. It was a beautiful movie, you know, visually. And, but I feel like Age of Resistance, they took it up a notch. And it's crazy because it's just like, oh my gosh, every single thing was so crazy and unique in the original, but that's nothing compared to Age of Resistance. It's just like, oh, we're going to do this even bigger and better. And while it's tempting, like normal prequels nowadays, it's tempting to just be like CGI everything. No, it's like, we're going to stick to the puppets, but we're going to make these elaborate, beautiful, unique new puppets. Just phenomenal. Okay, here we go.
So let's talk about where did this come from? How did this start? Because we had been hearing for a long time that the Jim Henson Company was going to do something with The Dark Crystal. Just as we've been hearing, they've been doing something with Fraggle Rock and Labyrinth and all of the properties that they maintained or kept after Disney had purchased the Muppets and those sorts of properties. So how did we get this? Well, originally, this was conceived as a sequel. They wanted to make a feature-length sequel. And that went into pre-production. It was titled The Power of the Dark Crystal. And like many things in film production today, and particularly when you're trying to do reboots and whatnot, it just got stuck in production purgatory and never kind of left. They had a director attached by the name of Louis Leterrier, I want to say. I apologize if that's incorrect. But in 2012, he really wanted to work on this. So he went around to all like a bunch of studios and execs and were like, hey, let's do a Dark Crystal sequel. And the studios and execs were like, what are you talking about? We don't know what that is. We don't really care. We're not going to do this. And so that kind of took the wind out of everybody's sails. And that kind of went on the back burner until Lewis ended up reading a bunch of like notes written by Jim Henson and Frank Oz themselves, like about the Dark Crystal when they were filming the original movie, and all of these kind of like world building notes that they had made all about like the world and events that happened prior to the movie Dark Crystal. And so he decided, well, like we have all of this really, really rich lore that was never used. Let's do that.
Mm-hmm.
And so he's like, okay, I'm going to try to pitch this. And they went to Netflix, and Netflix went for it, which was great. Originally, however, it was going to be an animated series. And they were like, you know what? It's expensive. Nobody wanted a movie. So we'll do this animated series, and at least we'll get some sort of Dark Crystal thing out into the world. And then there was a random VP at Netflix who was like, why aren't you guys doing this with puppets? And which like took the Henson company completely off guard by surprise. Like they had thought that nobody wanted this like done, and so they were like, heck yeah, we'll do it with puppets.
They're like, hold on, I got this crazy idea. Puppets.
Like, why not, you know? And so that's somebody who was like, heck yeah, let's do this. And so they went ahead, they did a like test, they made like a short film with puppets. And in 2016, they were given the green light to actually make this movie with puppets in the style of the original. So they announced it in May of 2017, began shooting in November of 2017, and they premiered August 30th, 2019.
Mm.
I know I was sitting in my apartment in Boston with a whole bunch of people really like ready to watch and really excited about that. I threw a party, a Dark Crystal party.
All of the puppet grad students at UConn got together at one of our houses, and yep. all of us sat around a couch and watched it. I remember it vividly. Yeah.
I even made Dark Crystal like snacks. I had like Dark Crystal popsicles. Like I made like this like juice pops, like I made them in the shape of popsicles and the shape of crystals. It was cool.
That's funny because I went out and got purple rock candy. And
yay! Yeah, there you go. Yeah.
That's great. Yep. We think alike.
You got it. You got it. You need themed snacks if you're going to have a watch party. That's an absolute necessity. And so series premiered. It was fairly successful. It was actually very successful. But unfortunately, as Netflix is wont to do, they canceled it only after one season, which was announced September of 2020, breaking all of our hearts. But yeah, they did cancel it, unfortunately. So we only have one season. It is a great season, mm-hmm. and we'll talk more about that. But who knows? It's still kind of there, and people who have created and worked on it are like, if anybody is willing to give them a shot and willing to do it and bring it back, they're more than happy to jump back on in, because they did leave it off in a spot where
they left it on such a cliffhanger, like beautiful moment too, and it was just like what.
Although interestingly enough, I feel like with this show in particular, it really doesn't matter where they end it, because we all know where it eventually ends, you know. Although I was reading that they do have like a full, not script of season two, but they have like a show Bible and they've plotted out the story of season two.
Wow.
And one of the few things that they have said is, surprisingly enough, season two will end, or would, if it is ever produced, end on a hopeful note. Whereas most people would assume that season two would end in disaster, but who knows? Maybe they're saving that for season three. Who knows?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it's kind of like when Star Wars episode three happened. It's like, you know, eventually what's going to happen here. It's just like, you just have to sit and watch the younglings die.
Yeah. So sad. But anyway, so that's the history of it and like where it came from, how we got it. Will, tell us a little bit about the plot. Cause I mean, here we had a movie, now we got a series. So it's a big plot, but what's going on?
Well, if you remember episode 17, I actually had to rewrite the plot and write it down, because it was so convoluted and crazy. So in that plot, I kind of did the world building part of it and how everything was made. So this, I'm just going to be short and sweet. So after discovering that their rulers, these Skeksis, are using Gelfling lives to corrupt the Crystal of Truth, to heal and rejuvenate themselves, a few Gelflings try to reunite the seven clans of the Gelflings and show them that the true nature of the Skeksis and like what they've been doing and start a rebellion. At the same time, the Crystal of Truth has then been broken and misused, and a sickness corrupts and maddens everything that it comes in contact with and the world around it, and that's the darkening, and it's spreading across the land. So yeah, that's pretty much it. It's the it's called the Age of Resistance. It's resistance. It's the formation of this rebellion against the Skeksis.
Yeah, that's pretty much it. And again, it's been interesting that we know exactly where this is going to end.
Yeah,
but we don't get there at least in season one. Mm-hmm. And it definitely does leave off for more interesting things to happen and kind of see more of this rebellion, which unfortunately probably will not get, but mm-hmm. would love to see. Mm-hmm. So Will, tell us a little bit about the puppets. We know that they were designed by Brian Froud in the original.
Yeah.
And there were some great puppets in the original. What about this new one? Do they hold up? What are they like?
So like we said last time in episode 17 again, all of the puppets in this entire world are just gorgeous, and they're all unique, and they're from little tiny bug creatures to these beautiful Skeksi puppets that are just so elaborate, an Augra, and like all of these beautiful things. But the worst thing, and the thing that brought down the Space to Carol so hard on that particular movie were the Gelflings. The Gelfling puppets in that were just dolls. They were just immovable dolls that were just like stiff and had this, I don't know, they just did not look good whatsoever. And it totally brought down the rest of the movie, really, in my mind. This, on the other hand, solves all of that. It fixes it, not only fixes it, but brings it so much better. They're are not only really good, beautiful Gelfling characters, but there's seven different tribes of Gelflings that are physically identifiable from the others. You know, it's unique. It's they're gorgeous. You can see the culture of each one of the tribes in their outfits, in their war paint, in their styles, the coloring. It's so good. It's so good. Yeah. But in the first one, so we said in the first one that there are puppets everywhere in this movie, just everywhere. There's little creatures here and there jumping through the woods, just an amazing amount, a plethora of different species in this. But in this, they go even farther. They make 70 different new species just in this show, added on to the already enormous list of creatures.
Yeah, that's nuts.
Yeah, there are 170 puppets just in this show. It's incredible. It's just so good. And I saw numbers. I saw somewhere that there were 88 different Gelfling characters in this one. 88, and they all look unique and beautiful. Mm-hmm. And it's so good.
You talk about how much better the Gelflings are.
Oh, yeah.
And I think there were a couple reasons for that.
They could move.
well, yes, they could move. Well, that is the reason.
Yeah.
They could move. But there were a couple reasons for that. And that being, A, the technology got better, right? And so while the original puppets had these animatronic parts, like eyes and stuff, they all needed to be controlled with mechs via cables. And it took four puppeteers to run one Gelfling. So you can only imagine if you got four people having to be like synced together and like tied together with all these cables, your freedom of movement is severely limited. For this one, they only needed two puppeteers. because now the animatronics could be controlled remotely. And get this, they used a modified Wii controller to manipulate the Gelfling's like facial expressions and stuff in this one. How cool is that? Yeah, like that's pretty cool. Like that's pretty awesome. But that allowed only two puppeteers to have to been able to manipulate a character, which means if one of them is remote, doesn't even need to be touching the puppet, how much more flexibility, how much more freedom of movement you have. And it just makes all the difference. Mm-hmm. They look so good, so much better than they did back in the day.
Yeah, but I mean, even the characters that looked good back then, like we said, the Skeksis, were just as good, if not also better. Like they again made these unique characters. Like each one of the Skeksis had a different look, and you could tell the characters from each other, even when they're these gross vulture creatures, you know. But I also saw somewhere that 300 feet of fabric was on each single one of those Skeksis costumes alone.
That's insane.
Each Skeksi had 300 feet of fabric on them. Like that's crazy. Just blows my mind. The costumes are, especially with the Skeksis, over the top and elaborate and Victorian looking and just symbolize luxury. And it was just, chef's kiss.
Yeah, so good. So tell us a little bit about the effects, like how they build these puppets.
Yeah. So one of the cool things about nowadays you have 3D printing to help with this, you know. There are 1,300 hours of 3D printing that was done into these puppets. I got a list of like facts here, you know. 2.5 million hairs were punched in. There were 75 different sets in this whole thing, which is not actually, when I heard that, I was like, oh, wow, I would have thought that'd been more, actually, because it's this huge world that they explore throughout the whole season. But, you know, just in like the Endless Forest, for example, there were 3,000 artificial plants and literally a ton of moss used just in that one set. It's so over the top, amazing, and elaborate and detailed. And like the first one, nothing in that is, you know, earthly, you know? None of this is from Earth. None of this is touched by anything of Earth. This is all Thra. And so to make sets that big and that elaborate and that detailed, it's just, it shows the, I think the, it really shows the love that people that were making this put in it. They loved this, and it shows. It really shows.
And again, the coolest thing about it is what little CGI they used. Here and there to remove rods and stuff and remove puppeteers. I think like when, like, they were on the car things.
Yeah,
the,
I was going to say the car thing.
With
with
like the pillbugs, which is a really, really cool, like just visual and idea and concept. But it's mostly practical puppets, which is just, like you said, chef's kiss.
Yeah, and we talk about this all the time, about the artistic blending of CGI and puppets. And they do it incredible in this. They're just, it's so good. There's very minimal CGI, and when they do it, you barely even notice. It's just weaved right in there perfectly.
So tell me a little bit about the puppeteers here, Will. Like, who we got? There are a ton of them, but let's just highlight some of the bigger ones, I guess.
Okay, there's a lot of puppeteers. In fact, there were 83 puppeteers in this entire thing.
Wow.
Lots and lots of puppeteers. But then when you think about all the different, you know, things that are going on, that makes sense. Neil Sternberg plays Rian, who's one of the main characters. And then Alice Dinian. I actually don't know her, so I don't know how to pronounce her name. but we'll find that out next week. Yes. And Becky Henderson plays Deet. But then, of course, you've got other classics thrown in there, like Kevin Clash, of course.
Of course.
Is in there. Dave Goulds, of course, is in there. Louise Gold.
Her and Dave are back from the Muppet Show days.
Yeah, yeah. Like, so it's
going way back, yeah.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. So it's like a combination of like the old classics and then mm-hmm. these really talented new puppeteers that are just like, where did you come from? You know? Yeah.
So good. So good.
Yeah. And those are like the puppeteers, but mm-hmm. then this thing is cram-packed. Like, if they did not spend their budget on the sets and on the puppets, they spent their budget on these vocal artists.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't realize. Like, I just watched it just for the sake of it, and I wasn't really paying attention. There were a couple voices that were like, oh my gosh, that's Mark Hamill, you know? Yeah. But you don't really, I wasn't really paying attention to the voice actors, but it's an insane list.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I mean, you got some great, like, you got Taron Egerton, you got Anya Taylor-Joy, like, Jason Isaacs. I mean, come on. Malfoy, and like various whatever, all the things that Jason Isaacs has done.
One thing that surprised the heck out of me was Simon Pegg.
Yeah, Simon Pegg.
Simon Pegg plays the Chamberlain, and it's so spot on from the original. Yeah. I was like,
yeah,
I had no idea. That's so good.
Crazy. I mean, you already said Mark Hamill. I mean, come on. Andy Samberg, Bill Hader, Helena Bonham Carter. You got Natalie Dormer in there. Sigourney Weaver's narrating it.
Yep, that's a beautiful way to start off the whole show, too. Like, the show's starting right off the bat, boom, Sigourney Weaver.
Yeah, right? And even, like, you got Awkwafina and Harvey Fierstein playing a couple of the Skeksis, which is just, like, if you had told me that before watching the show, that they were going to play some Skeksis, I would have been like, you're out of your mind. That's not going to be good, but they're amazing. They do a great job. And it's like, okay, it works. It works. So yeah, one of the things that I really, really appreciated about this, and you know, we said it a couple of weeks ago when we did Fraggle Rock, you know, this idea of voice actors, you know, and puppeteers always feels a little off, you know, because you want to make sure that you have those puppeteers doing that work. But I think they did this the right way in that they did it the same way they did the original, where it was filmed first and puppeteered first, and the puppeteers gave the original performance. And then the actors, the voice actors, went back and ADR'd the dialogue afterwards. So the voice actors had to match the performance of the puppeteer and not the other way around, which is usually you would have the puppeteer matching like the voice performance. Because I mean, it's just kind of easier to like get the puppet to do it. But it is nice to see that they did go ahead and have the puppeteers give the original performance, and then the voice actors go ahead and have to match that. Kind of, I think, kind of gives more life to the puppetry, you know, and it makes the puppetry to me feel more authentic when they do it that way.
Well, one thing that I feel weird about is like, These puppeteers, you know, that puppeteer it back in England, what's wrong with them doing the voices?
No, exactly.
Like, I'm watching it and I'm like, I'm sure that, you know, they would do a bang up job if they just voiced it, and you could save yourself millions on that cast, you know? I understand having big names in it to draw a little bit of attention.
That's the only reason. Yeah.
Yeah. But, you know, who noticed that Helena Bonham Carter was in it? You know, I didn't notice that Bill Hader was in it, you know?
Yeah.
I wouldn't have known.
We do have to say, though, big, big props to Victor Urid, who puppeteered Hup, and his performance was so good that they actually kept his voice. So Hup's performance is the puppeteer. Victor Urid, he's been with the Henson Company for a while. He's a staple of Henson projects. But he did such an amazing job with Hup that they're like, nope, we're gonna let him keep the voice. And Hup is my favorite character, hands down.
Yep. I know.
Not even a question. I love Hup with every fiber of my being. I would die for that puppet.
See, we know you love Hop. Actually, Deet is my favorite character. I love Deet. Like,
I would have to say that Deet is my favorite Gelfling.
Okay, okay, that. That's fair.
I love Deet, yes.
That's fair. You watch it and you're like, I know we're supposed to really get behind Rianne, you know?
Yeah.
Like, we're supposed to really be, but like Deet's character is so genuine and good and gentle that you're like, oh man, I love Deet so much.
Yeah. 100%, 100%. Deet is my favorite Gelfling for sure.
Okay.
But
okay.
Hop, just with the spoon, Hop, Hop, yep. Paladin! Like, I love it. I love it so much. Yeah. But that's those are the puppets and the puppeteers.
Mm-hmm.
So how was this whole thing received? Well, as of right now, it has a 89% rating on Rotten Tomatoes, which is pretty awesome. Average score of 6.8 out of 10 and an 82 out of 100 on Metacritic. So, you know, people really enjoyed this. If you watched this series, you really enjoyed it. I think, obviously, their biggest issue was just getting people initially to sit down and watch it. You know, it is kind of a weird thing. And if you're not familiar with or a fan of the original Dark Crystal, you're like, what is this weird fantasy thing with puppets, huh? Mm-hmm. Like, it's very much that. And I think had they really leaned more into marketing, you know, and marketed even more, I think it could have been even more successful and probably gotten them a season two.
Yeah, I was thinking about that just earlier today and like trying to come up in my head of why some of the reasons why we didn't get a season two. And I thought, well, maybe it was just too expensive and they didn't get enough response right away to justify how much money they spent on it. Because, you know, I don't know how much money they spent. I didn't look that up. But had to have been an expensive show.
Oh, yeah.
For sure. And that's really difficult for me to wrap my head around because I'm so biased as a puppeteer that I'm like, money's no object. You know, like, give me Dark Crystal season two. Dang it. I'm not really sure what actually went down there, but I'm just so incredibly biased and want it so desperately that.
I mean, I think it's just part and parcel, and we could go on an entire rant about just the model of Netflix producing shows in and of itself. Like, right, when you have a studio, these studios like Amazon and Netflix producing shows for a subscriber-based platform, really, how much money are you really getting back? You know, like, all of your money's coming from subscribers. So, like, is this show driving more subscribers to the platform? Probably not. Honestly, that's probably right. If people were like, I'm going to sign up for Netflix just to watch this show. But like, that's an impossible thing to ask. And when that's your business model, I don't know. A lot smarter people than us could go on about the Netflix business model and its flaws and whatnot. But I don't know who needs to pick it up, but somebody needs to do this because we need season two.
So, I don't know. We want to talk about some of the characters that are in this. Like we just dabbled with Hup and Dee, like, but I think the show is very character driven kind of thing, you know, like the characters are so interesting, so amazing. You know, like I said in the first one, how I love the Mystics, you know, and in this one you've got, you know, Archer. You also have the duo at which again, I can't remember their names. I didn't bother to look it up. But the Skeksis and the Mystic duo that do the puppets. It's this little, like, I don't know, the characters are just so good in this show. It's so good. And so unique also. Like a lot of the Gelflings look very similar. They're not similar, but like the sisters, right? Like you take the three sisters, they all look very, very similar. They're, you know, they're sisters. But you can still identify which one is which and know the characters like really, really well. I don't know. I'm just blabbing now.
No, but these characters are, for being otherworldly characters, the humanity in them is just, to me, what's the most astounding thing to me.
Well, I mean, right off the bat, episode one, you know, is a spoiler. I don't want to spoil this for anybody, But there's, you know, the moment I'm talking about where you are just, your heart is just torn out right in front of you. Like the saddest thing that has ever happened to a puppet right off the bat. And these are puppets. These are puppets. And yet you completely are in, you know, you're in.
Yeah. And I think it was really smart of them to focus on this idea of like the different tribes and not to have the one main character in it, to be like, you know, you got Rian and his dad and in of those, and then you have Bria and like the princess and with like the queen, and I forget what they call the queen, and then you have Deet for the underground ones, and you have all of these different kind of groups. And it's much more of an ensemble cast this time.
Yes.
Which I think is really, really interesting. It allows us to jump around to see a lot of things going on. But it also allows us to see the events from all of these different perspectives. And you just like really, really get to know these characters and what they want, what makes them tick. And it's just, it's spectacular. I mean, there's no other way to say it.
I feel like we're just nonstop giving this thing praise, like it's the greatest thing we've ever seen, and we have yet to say one single bad thing about it. But honestly, I can't come up with the worst thing about this show is they didn't make a season two. You know, it's so good. And you know, Space to Carol, this thing, you know, it's like. Carol is the top of the list, but this is because it's a perfect movie in your and I's brains. This is a perfect show.
I don't know if I would have given it a perfect.
Well, there we go. I need to hear some negativity about this because I can't come up with anything I don't like about it.
No, I mean, I think it's spectacular. And if we are actually going to Space to Carol this, I'm definitely going to put it at a 7.5.
Okay, well, why? Good. I like this because I need the 0.5 because where did you lose the 0.5?
I lost the 0.5 because it is so big and so large because it is a series and it is the story is spread out so much among all of these different like times and places and characters. I do feel that there are some times and some things that drag a little bit. You know, there are some times we jump and you're kind of like, okay, that storyline is not quite as great, or like maybe I've lost it here. So that's where I'm kind of going to give it the 0.5. I don't think it's perfect, mainly because I think just the scope of it is so large. I think it would be impossible to be perfect. You know what I'm saying?
Okay.
There are times when you're just like, it does drag a little bit. There are times when it does feel a little soap opera-y in like the constant jumping. You know, sometimes I wish they would just stick with this one a little bit more, you know, and that's like, okay, now I have to go back and think about who was here and what's here and like, oh, I won. Oh, no, now you're jumping. Oh, well, I was just getting into that. So for that aspect, I would say that I'm going to give it a 7.5 on the Space of Carol, just because it's amazing. It's beautiful. It's breathtaking. The story is great. But again, also, though, if I were to just look at the story, and this is not their fault, this is just the nature of the beast. But if you look at just the story of season one, they start this rebellion, or they don't even start, they start planting the seeds of this rebellion. And a lot of like amazing, powerful moments happen. I mean, I bawled my eyes out like a little boy, and I'm sure you know what part I'm talking about. No spoilers, but it is the first time I've cried, and I'm a puppeteer. I love puppets. This is the first time I've cried, genuinely wept. And we're not talking about the part in season one, it's like later on in the season moment where I openly wept. And that was just beautiful and phenomenal. Throughout all of this, at the end of the day, what is really accomplished in the story? Not much. What they're really doing is setting up for a season two, which they're not going to get, you know? And so
Okay.
Like you said, okay. It ends on this like great cliffhanger, like, oh yeah, this is gonna be awesome. And then no season two. And again, that's not their fault, but at the same time.
Yeah, and that's, again, that's why I say that that's the worst part, is that they don't.
But at the same time, I mean, you do also have to know that's a possibility. Two. You know? And so, like, I would have liked to see a little more, I don't know, like, kind of rounding out. But it's very tough, A, because of, you know, the fact they didn't get a season two. But also, again, going back to the fact that we all know that it does eventually end in tragedy. In terrible tragedy. You know? And so, like...
Yeah.
How hopeful can you make it? How, you know, and it's you know where it's going to go. And that is, of course, the danger of doing a prequel like that, especially a prequel where the original movie like begins in such a bleak place.
I don't know. But I mean, there are lots of prequels that are made where, or even movies that are made where, you know, where it's going. And like Titanic, you know, the Star Wars.
True.
Oh, when they made that prequel of the movie The Thing, like, you know, everybody's gonna die, but it's just like, you just, you know, it's you want to know the backstory.
That's true. Yeah.
Okay. So now that you've got me opening up my brain here and thinking about things in detail, there were a couple of things that didn't confuse me, but made me think. Really, though? Like the fact that at the very beginning, they didn't show it, but it was in Sigourney Weaver's little monologue, but talking about Agra giving the Skeksis reign over the crystal and Thra, and you kind of stop and you think, you're like, what was she thinking on that? Like, why? That's a really big... spot where it's just like, you need to have a whole season in that. Like, how did that happen?
Yes. Yeah, it's definitely implied that the Skeksis somehow kind of like tricked her into it, kind of like manipulated her into
like,
it.
What did they say? Like, yeah, and that, you know, there are a couple of things here and there where it's just like, what?
Yeah, exactly.
but yeah.
I mean, even the beginning basic premise that all of the Gelflings venerate the Skeksis.
Yeah,
like,
okay.
That is are really weird, gross. Like, what are they doing for you? Like, what did they do to make you think that they were your benefactor? You know, like, I just, that always was a little like, really? Like, they're trying to set the Gelflings up, right? Like, this whole series is about the Gelflings finding their power and finding their agency, right? Yeah. And like showing how these like small creatures can really be smart and can really like rise up, you know, and kind of like a little guy versus like the big guy kind of scenario. But I think that's kind of undermined a little bit when it's like they're supposed to be the like really smart, intelligent creatures, but they've fallen for the Skeksis, and there's really no evidence, or at least they don't tell us the evidence as to why the Gelflings would venerate the Skeksis in the first place. But yeah, because of that, but again, near perfect show. I loved it. Everyone needs to watch it. If you are remotely a puppet fan, if you are a fantasy fan, if you just like good like relationships and like heart-wrenching like moments in relationships, like, you gotta watch this series. It's spectacular. Yeah. It's absolutely spectacular. But 7.5, as close to perfect as we can get. I'm not gonna quite give it the 8.
Okay, well, I'm either gonna give it the, you know, no, I'm, you know what, you know what, while I don't think that it's maybe it's not as good as Christmas Carol, the iconic perfect movie and all that, looking at the other 8s we've given, I would give this an 8. I would absolutely give this an 8.
Great, then it's going to sit at an 8, right? Because you're going to round it up to the 8.
Oh, no, actually, the lower person rounds it to it. So you decide whether it's 7 or 8.
Oh, okay. I thought it was just automatic.
The lower person decides.
Then I'm gonna do exactly what you did to Fraggle Rock, back to the Rock. Right? You gave it the 7.5, bumped it to the 8. I'm gonna give this the 7.5 on my own, but it's so close to an 8. I'm gonna bump it to the 8. We're gonna give this one an 8.
Yeah, which is, you know, which is a nice little side talking point of these two. Henson, the shows, the Fraggle Rock and the Dark Crystal that have come back, that are just so well done, so well done. And like we said last time with Fraggle Rock, they took their time. You know, we sit here and we complain. Where's our labyrinth?
Where is it? We need it. Dang it!
But when it comes, dang, it's good. Dang, it's good.
Yep. If I gotta wait forever for the labyrinth for it to be this good, then you know what?
Oh yeah, I'll wait.
Yeah, 100%. I just gotta keep telling myself that. As much as I want it, we live in a world of like instant gratification, but really, really good things take time. Things are worth waiting for. And this and Fraggle Rock was an example, and I hope that they continue along this path. I hope they continue to take their time, pour their love, passion into these projects, because when they do, they give us some spectacular series and just great stories, and they really, really are doing the legacy of Jim Henson such credit, and are
absolutely
are really continuing the legacy. And while I don't think we're getting the amount, you know, of projects that the Henson Company would pump out back in its heyday under the time of Jim, you know, but he was an absolute genius and unparalleled and, you know, a workaholic.
But also, the poor man worked himself to death. Like, it's good that we, you know, take breaks in between.
No, exactly. But but what I'm saying is I think that the Henson Company nowadays doesn't get the credit it deserves because of that. Because they're not so constantly like in your face with a new thing every year or every 6 months. But they're doing it right. They're 100% doing it right. We as puppet fans are very, very fortunate to have them working on this stuff and giving us just great, great, great stories and great projects. I'm very, very excited to see what they have coming up next.
Oh yeah.
And so there you have it, folks. Dark Crystal Age of Resistance is going to sit at an 8 on the Space to Carol spectrum. Yeah. If you haven't seen it, check it out. It's great. It's spectacular. Do yourself a favor. Absolutely. Got any other last thoughts about Dark Crystal or anything along those lines?
I think that since it is a series and there are multiple episodes that are lengthy, It is an investment.
Yes.
You know, you do actually have to sit down, you know, a couple of nights, you know, a week and actually invest in it.
Yeah.
But if you do, it is so incredibly worth it. And it's one of those shows that is so beautiful character wise and emotionally and visually that you can't help but get sucked in.
Yeah.
And for people like Ben and I, or at least me speaking, for people like me, where you are a former puppeteer, you watch stuff like that and you're like, man, I miss it.
Yeah. Oh, 100%.
Like, 100%. You watch it and you're just like, this is so beautiful.
Yep. It's like why we got into it in the first place.
Yep.
You know, with the hopes to tell stories like that. And those people who work on this, so lucky and so just so brilliant. And we are lucky to have them making these things for us.
I agree.
Well, I think that's where we're going to leave it for this week.
For this week, yeah.
Yeah. Will, what are we doing next week?
So next week, as we said, this is a two-parter. But as you could tell, we pretty much summed it up in one episode of what we felt about this. So, next week, we are going to have another special guest. And let me tell you, this is a very special guest.
Yes.
I'm very, very excited to announce that next week, we are going to be having an interview with Becky Henderson, the puppeteer of Deet from this show.
Oh, yeah, I am so excited.
So excited. Like, my favorite character in this show.
Mm-hmm.
Let's talk to the puppeteer.
Oh my God. Yeah. And I'm away on vacation this week, but I was like, nope, I'm coming home early. Like, there was a chance that I was like going to be out and about for an extra day. And I was like, nope, I got to get home. Cause I can't miss this interview. I already missed the last interview and it broke my heart. Yeah. So I'm like, nope, coming home early, and we're going to do this because I'm so incredibly excited.
Doing research in this and looking at videos, and I even went to Barnes & Noble and picked up a book that was like the making of this show and the visuals of this show. Mm-hmm. And there she is, Becky Henderson, right in this book. Like, she's incredible. Mm-hmm. I'm very excited. We get to talk to her next week. Please join us. It's going to be so cool.
Yeah. Absolutely. I am so excited for that. Mm-hmm. So, Will, where can we find us for those who are really excited about hearing our interview with Becky Henderson and wants to get in, maybe even ask some questions, you know, toss them out at us? Where can you find us?
That's a, you know what? That's a very good idea. You can find us on Instagram. You can also find us on Facebook. Mm-hmm. But actually, you should join us on Discord, because that way, you can just send us questions and we could ask her direct questions, actually, if you'd like. That'd be really, really cool. But join us on Instagram, Facebook, Discord. It's going
to
be great.
Yeah, we got some new people this week. We'll shout out to Silly, a new member on the Discord. We got your brother shooting in with some disturbing photos, but hilarious nonetheless.
Man, Aaron, calm down.
Of course, our good buddy Bria is always in there with some quick wit and a nice comment. So yeah, come in again, ask questions. And, if we get enough of them, you know, we can, get your questions, directly to, Becky Henderson herself. So that'll be awesome. Cool. Well, thank you once again for joining us. We are so glad that you came and sat and listened to us this week. Make sure to come on back for our interview next week, and we will see you next time. Say goodbye, Will.
Goodbye, Will.
This podcast was recorded, edited, and produced by Ben David and K. William Smith. Music by Tatro.
It's honestly, it's okay, Ben. If you can't make it, I mean, I know I can do the interview by myself. I've done it
before. I swear to if you even think for one second that you're going to do this interview without me, I will rip.
Wow.